Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to From the Vault, our weekly series that brings our history out of the closet and onto the radio. This week, we listen to the dawn of the modern gay liberation movement following the Stonewall riots in 1969 through the tumultuous decade that followed, ending with the killing and assassination of San Francisco supervisor Harvey Milk and the White Night riots that followed. First, we present a KPFK Gay Day broadcast that was originally aired in 1979 on Pacifica station KPFK in Los Angeles. This was the second year KPFK would produce a special Gay Day broadcast, a tradition that would continue until 1995. The program begins by recapping Pacifica's coverage of the Stonewall Inn police raids and the subsequent resistance in the early morning hours of June 28, 1969, that has become infamously known as the Stonewall Riots.
June 28, 1970. Gay power, gay power. Thousands marched in New York City, Chicago, and Los Angeles. They represented the mood of growing militancy in the United States gay community. It was actually a commemoration day as much as a civil rights demonstration, because one year before, thousands of homosexuals rioted in New York's Greenwich Village section. The disorders began with a routine police raid on a homosexual bar, the Stonewall, on Christopher Street, in the heart of the West Village, commonly referred to as the gay ghetto of New York. By the end of the week, scores of police and rioters had been injured, many were arrested, and one man, a cab driver, was dead. Almost every homosexual who was in New York at the time of the Stonewall Rebellion has his own private memory of what took place. One of the longtime leaders of the gay rights movement, Craig Rodwell, remembers it this way.
Yes, I was there every night. The first night was Friday. I was on my way home from a friend's house. The raid was just starting at that time, and we noticed the crowds, so we went over there. And a crowd was gathering out in front, and there was a paddy wagon pulled up and a few people being taken out. The crowd was very quiet at the time. I wasn't. I started yelling gay power and get the mafia out of the bars, and my lover nudged me and told me to shut up. But within about 15 minutes, the crowd really started going really far, much further beyond what I would have done or did. It started with a few coins and pebbles being thrown at the police, and then the police retreated into the Stonewall, and parking meters were brought out, and chants of gay power and get the mafia out of the bars. And then after the police barricaded themselves inside, it was like half an hour later, the riot police started moving up Christopher, breaking up the crowd, which had really become a very angry crowd with hundreds of bottles and rocks. There wasn't one window left in the whole place after about 10 minutes. And they broke the crowd up into small groups, and this went on for like 2 or 3 hours back and forth in the whole area. I think they thought that people would just go home or run, especially since they were gay people. They're not used to gay people standing up at all, especially in front of police. But the people would, they would chase the people away, and they would go around the block and come in another way. And this sort of tug of war went on all evening. And then on Saturday night, it was much the same thing. Starting about 9, crowds started to gather in the area, sort of small groups on the sidewalk. And then around 11 or 12, they started taking over the street and stopping cars from coming through, unless there were gay people in them. A few fires were set. But generally, it was an angry mood, a lot of chanting, a lot of hand-holding, a lot of assertion of being gay. And that, it was a way of saying we're tired of hiding, tired of leading two lives, tired of denying our basic identity, denying ourselves. A general assertion of gay people, with a newfound pride, really, a collective pride in their identity.
The Stonewall Rebellion served notice on the heterosexual majority that a growing number of gays were not afraid anymore and were not content to continue living out their lives in fear and oppression.
They say I'm crazy, got no sense, but I don't care. They may or may not mean offense. but I don't care. You see, I'm sort of independent. I am my own superintendent, and my star is on the ascendant. That's why I don't care. I don't care. I don't care what they may think of me. I'm happy-go-lucky. They say that I'm plucky, contented, and carefree. I don't care. I don't care if I do get a mean and stony stare. If I'm not successful, it won't be distressful, 'cause I don't care.
The Stonewall Rebellion will be remembered as one of the major turning points in the homosexual struggle for equality. Dr. Franklin Kameny, president of the Washington, D.C. Mattachine Society, explains why.
Whatever one may think of the merits of that particular form of expression of protest or dissent, and whatever you may think of the merits of that particular demonstration, those are not that relevant. That what's important is the message which is being conveyed, and that should be made absolutely clear. And that is that we've been shoved around for 3,000 years, and we're tired of it, and we're starting to shove back. And if we don't get what's coming to us and get it promptly, there's going to be a lot more shoving back.
Craig Rodwell says
it still is a relatively small minority of gay people who do reflect this new spirit, whatever you want to call it. But the fact that there is a minority or a group of gay people or a large group reflecting it is very important. And I think it's going to infect the masses of gay people in the coming years.
Following the Stonewall incident in New York City, we would see the creation of gay and lesbian activist groups that would begin the struggle for gay rights that continue today. On the other end of the spectrum, the modern anti-gay movement was spearheaded and motivated by Anita Bryant in 1977.
Gay Day.
You know what we're really fighting for? That's just to be left alone. Just the right to make a living. Just the right to live where we want to. Just the right to associate with other individuals, just as every other American citizen wishes to do.
Then in 1978, Harvey Milk becomes the first openly gay male elected into public office. IMRU's Greg Gordon recorded this now famous interview with newly sworn in San Francisco supervisor Harvey Milk on February 21st, 1978.
I'm Harvey Milk. I'm a supervisor in San Francisco.
And I'm Greg Gordon for IMRU.
And I'm gay.
And so am I. And we're up in San Francisco in Harvey's office at Castro Camera. And Harvey's graciously taken a few minutes out of his very busy schedule to talk to us about politics in San Francisco and how he got elected, the first openly gay person to be elected to public office in California history.
I'd like to also talk about politics in California rather than San Francisco.
That's fine.
Because I don't think there's a delineation.
You don't think that there's a difference in politics in San Francisco as opposed to, let's say, politics in Los Angeles?
It's a matter of degree. There's no moat built around the city of San Francisco that separates us from the rest. Sometimes we wish there were. but I think what takes place in San Francisco, for whatever reasons, can take place any place. And it's just a matter of understanding what it's all about. And San Francisco, it's very interesting because of the fact that I'm gay, that becomes the big media event that sells the newspapers. But it's very important that we realize that I was elected as a candidate who was gay rather than a gay candidate. Did not run on a gay issue. In San Francisco, the difference from L.A. is that we are both county supervisors and city council people, one and the same. The city is divided into 11 districts, and since we are city and county, it's one powerful, very powerful legislative group. You have to picture if you're L.A. city council and your L.A. board of supervisors were one and the same, that's what we are. And we are an activist group rather than puppets of the strong mayor or something like that. In my particular district, we've had about five or six major district battles versus citywide problems. In every one, I was involved in them, on one side or the other. there wasn't one other candidate. There were 17 people running this district. There wasn't one other candidate who had been involved in every single district problem. I was there. People on the streets would say to me, Harvey, I don't agree with your issue, but I know you're a fighter. I know you're there. I know you will be there when we need you. They couldn't say that about any of the other candidates in this district or hardly in any other district. A lot of candidates I ran against would vote right, the same as I do. But they wouldn't be the activist. They wouldn't be the advocate. They wouldn't be the leader.
If you add the gay community with the other traditional minorities, we should have control of the state. But we cannot sit in the back of the bus and let the other minorities lead. We should show the leadership. In fact, we are in an incredible position. You see, take San Francisco, which is a very heavy minority city. Over 50% of the population is minority. Because of the fighting for those crumbs, sometimes the black community doesn't talk to the Chicano community, the Filipino won't talk to the Asians won't talk to anybody, you know. Nevertheless, they all talk to me, the gay person. Partly for two reasons. One, because within the gay community, we have gay Asians, gay blacks, gay Filipino, you know, we are infiltrated. That's part of the reason. We cut across the line. Second of all, for whatever reasons, I'm the one that can pull it together. So we are trying very strongly to pull together that coalition. In view of that, we realized, at least I have always realized, is the voter registration. We are kicking off a massive voter registration drive with the Chinese and gay community together soon. You know, there's many reasons for that. Working very tight with the Asian community, very tight. And if we can pull it off here, and if LA pulls it off, if we pull it off statewide, that within 10 years, the minorities will be running the state. And when the minorities, I'm talking about the feminists, I'm talking about the gays included on that. And so we have to fight that. We have to fight with our natural allies. But it can't be just because a person is black or green or gay or orange or whatever it may be. They have to be issue oriented. Cannot accept somebody to get up there, I'm gay, therefore vote for me.
How do you motivate people to register? Because this is a fundamental problem that we've always had.
Motivate them, say, do you like Ed Davis? Do you like Senator Briggs? Do you like Anita Bryan? You motivate them because it's, you tell them that the legislators and the executive officers, be they the local supervisor, be they statewide, run your life. They run your life and they spend your money. And when they collect tax money from gay people and don't give us anything back in return, take it for their golf courses, take our tax money for their pet projects, and on top of it, insult us by not giving us our rights. That's not motivation. If you like being harassed by the police, if you like being a third-class citizen, if you like being beat up by punks, if you like the church yelling at you, don't register, don't vote. But don't complain. If you want to be shoved back in your closet, if you want to be the traditional gay person who gets beat up and whimpers home and say, well, I'm gay and I deserve to get beat up, fine. Otherwise, the only thing you can do is register to vote.
What about the reasonably well-off gay couples or gay singles in the hills somewhere who never had any trouble with the police, who've never, you know, they can say, that's never happened to me,
right.
You know, why should I get involved?
That reminds me of the wealthy Jews in Nazi Germany when Hitler first was picking up the Jewish communists and Jewish socialism. They were scum. That's not us. We are accepted. You know, we've been accepted. We ride in the back of the bus. It's like the Uncle Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, when Hitler started having the concentration camp, he didn't care if you were a Jewish socialist or a Jewish fascist. You were Jewish, you went. When the Briggs and Anita Bryan take over, they don't care if you are the accepted hairdresser or the gay doctor or the gay lawyer or the gay society person. You are gay, you will go off. And if that sounds like a stereotype thing, stop and think Nazi Germany. What it did to the gay people. There were 600,000 gay people killed. Prior to Hitler's taking over in the 20s, the gay movement in Germany was more advanced than the gay movement in San Francisco in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
There was a statewide, a nationwide convention of gay people in Germany, 8,000 gay people. We've never had anything like that here. There were letters written to the Reichstag to tell them to throw out the anti-gay laws. Scientists, doctors, everybody was preaching for gayness and acceptability. In Russia, 1917, they threw out the anti-gay laws. And then Stalin took over. And that was the end of the gay movement. Hitler took over at the end of the gay movement. And if you think history doesn't repeat itself, you're crazy. And the only defense about that is it's not just to be organized, but to get involved and to realize who the common enemy is. Unfortunately, within the gay community, we have such a class distinction and racism within the gay community and sexism within the gay community, because some people think they're better than the rest. When it comes down to it, we all do the same thing. They got to get involved. The gay elitists, the gay wealthy people, the gay society people, the gay people who have made it, they have to fight the battle now.
In many cases, they're in the better positions to be able to do it, too.
And they also in a position to lose more. Because the gay street person, i.e. whatever that means, what has that person got to lose by fighting the battle?
Well, that's why they were out in the front
right,
at the beginning.
Right, but the well-to-do, those who have made it, they've got a lot to lose. They've got to lose what they're worried about. And they're the ones who have to come through, and if they want to stay in their closet and so forth, fine, but get their checkbooks out of the closet. It's needed. It's desperately needed that the checkbooks come out of the closet. I know the power I have as elected official in this city. It's incredible. I mean, I'm restricted by the charter of what I can do or I can't do, but boy, can I do it. And I know that when I speak out in this city, I mean, the police department is nervous, the Chamber of Commerce is nervous. I know the power I have. And if you don't start, whoever's listening, if you don't start helping electing gay people, and not just gay people, but gay fighters who will get up and not take it and sit back, who will fight for it, if you don't start electing it, we ain't going to be in trouble. Gay street people have to register and vote, and they have to realize that it cannot be only voting for the people who believe in every single thing they do. You know? There's no such thing. There's no such perfect candidate, you know. They have to compromise and bend to realize things. And the gay person who is living in the hills has to realize that he or she can't only support the conservative type people or the respectable type people. That we both have to lose. You both will lose. And if you don't get together.
We had a couple of gay people running in as candidates for assembly in Los Angeles, in the Los Angeles districts 44th and 46th. Some political gay political clubs did not endorse them. What happens when you have two or three or four gay political groups or gay organizations that are in a position to help, but who cannot seem to get together? Because obviously you've got to have a coalesced movement in order to elect somebody. What can you say to these people?
In my first three attempts to run, I've run four times if I win. I was never supported by the gay establishment. I was never supported by the gay political leaders. I was never supported by the gay clubs. And the reason why is if I won, I would have been what I am now that I won. And they would no longer be the top of the hill. They don't realize that there's room at the top for a lot of people. They wanted to be, they'd rather have been the Uncle Tom in the back of the bus, or the Aunt Mary as I call them, and be the token, be the first to discover Barbara Streisand, to be, you know, the token fag, rather than to see a gay person elected and the power go that way. They didn't realize there's room for plenty. And I have found out in San Francisco, the so-called gay leaders of the time, they were for themselves, they were not for the gay movement. And so my answer is to LA is get it together. I find it offensive that gay leadership is so jealous of somebody else. I find that offensive. I find that people who say, oh, well, but we owe this to this person like that. I said, bull. You owe it. The reason is gay political clubs is to get the ultimate, is to get gays elected. That's why it exists, because we've been there. And then to walk away from gay candidates, unless they are unqualified, that's a different story. When I say unqualified, I mean when they're really ass. Beep, 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 beep. X-rated. Bleep. If they no good, if they turkeys, that's a different story.
Well, if they're turkeys, they probably should never have gotten to the point where they're running in the first.
Well, no, turkeys can run. Anybody
that's
can
true.
Run.
Well, yeah, I've seen that.
Turkeys get elected.
God knows.
But when you're faced with even if you're faced with a gay turkey and a straight turkey, you know, you go to the gay. And show me how many great non-gay candidates there really are. But to come up with the reasons that I read about, I know that the gay candidates in L.A. were facing the same thing I did. My advice to them is that then work that much harder and throw out those so-called gay leaders who are not gay leaders, but they are self-perpetuating self-leaders, self-appointed, have never done anything to get broad base support, elitist support, yes, or groups, yes, but never broad base.
Very much like David Goodstein, and yet I understand Goodstein did not support
you. Oh, Goodstein fought against me bitterly, for the same reason.
And then threw a victory party for you.
He lost. You know, at least he's smart enough to realize who won. He lost, and he understands. Goodstein was always against me, used everything he could against me, and he never met with me, never understood what it was about, for whatever reason. But what you've got to do down in L.A. is that if the establishment supports straight people, if the gay establishment doesn't understand what the gay movement's all about, you got to get rid of them. And I'm not telling you they're not nice guys, not nice, wonderful people. I'm not talking about that they're fun people to be with. But if they don't understand what the gay movement's about, you got to get rid of them. And I'll tell you what the gay movement's about. After I got elected, I got the phone call I knew I'd eventually get. Got caught a few of them. One was from a 17-year-old child in a small town in Minnesota. And the boy is handicapped. And the boy's parents found out he's gay, and they want to put him in an insane asylum. And that boy needs help. And the gay moon is about the letter I got from Southwest Africa when he read about a gay person getting elected here. And that person has hope. And that 17-year-old kid in Minnesota has hope. And when we have gay leaders not understanding that and are more worried about their own personal power, they're not gay leaders. They're offensive.
Another reason that some people don't register or don't want to get involved in what they will call, quote, establishment politics is that they're just anti-establishment politics, period. You know, that the way to change the system is revolution. What can you say to these people who don't want to get involved, who don't want to register, who feel like voting and the whole establishment political process is a waste of time and not the way to do it?
Okay, the establishment political process stinks. I, too, would prefer to throw a bomb, except the establishment has more bombs than I have. So the option is something that I told, about 3 years ago. 3 years ago, there were a group of three, or maybe it was 4 years ago, three of gay socialists came in who I know, and we had a nice long talk, and they talked about how bad the system was, and that the system has to be overthrown. Then we got talking about police brutality and harassment. And I said after a while, what if you were the three police commissioners, and I was the chief of police? And they said, great. I said, I thought the system stinks. It's not the system that stinks, it's the people who are running the system stinks. If everybody out there who thought the establishment and the system was rotten were running it, if the most radical liberal person, revolutionary person was the mayor of L.A., and the next one was the chief of police, and the next group of the city council, the next group of the board of supervisors, they would be able to change the system. You have two ways of changing the system, revolution or getting in and bending it from within. Unfortunately, revolution will not work. I mean, it ain't gonna happen. As long as there's two cars in every garage and a drop of gasoline and a TV set and you can wash your glasses and not get spots on it, the revolution is not gonna exist because people are afraid of the unknown. And so they rather have the awful conditions that exist rather than the unknown. The revolution will not be televised. But rapid evolution can take place. Already on the board of San Francisco supervisors, in 6 weeks, things that were never discussed before have been discussed. The dialogue has been opened, which was never there before, and we won a lot of the votes. The very first major battle, and it doesn't sound like a major battle, but it is a major battle, was the location of a drug rehabilitation center, a Latino drug rehabilitation center in a white neighborhood. And the conservatives just won at it. And I battled them. I really battled them on it. And we won. We won the vote. A, that dialogue would never have taken under the old board. 7 weeks ago, that would never even come up for vote. And B, we won it. So what is revolution, you know? It's not what I like to see. But we are going to have a rapid evolution. We've already had it in San Francisco. Just stop and think. The day the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco was sworn in, the tradition is every supervisor gets up and says a few general words and introduces their family there. And the first words out of my mouth, and the national press was there, was, "As you know, I am gay." That has never been spoken before in any legislative body in this country. And I said that there's a state law that says gay people cannot legally be married. But there is no state law or law any place in the universe that says two people cannot love each other. And I like to introduce my lover. And if that's not a revolution, I don't know what is. Sure, it's not what we want. But, you know, we're battling thousands of years of prejudice and thousands of years of a system. It's got to change. It's not going to be easy. And there's got to be a lot more Harvey Milks. There's just got to be. There's too many young kids in little towns in Minnesota.
You've been listening to a conversation I had with San Francisco Supervisor Harvey Milk in his office at Castro Camera in February 1978. And here's Harvey doing what Harvey probably liked to do best, speaking at the Gay Pride rally after the local Los Angeles Gay Pride parade in July 1978, just 4 months before he was killed.
The blacks did not win their rights by sitting quietly in the back of the bus. They got out!
You in the voting booth, and you must come out to your friends that they are your friends. to the bigots of the world, to the Anita Bryans and to the John Princes and to those people there in those homes who are bigots all over the state, I have a message. And this is the message. On the Statue of Liberty it says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free. In the Declaration of Independence it is written, all men are created equal and they are endowed with certain inalienable rights. And finally, in our national anthem, it says, oh say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave over the land of the free? And bigots, bigots, no matter how hard you try, you cannot erase those words from the Declaration of Independence. No matter how hard you try, no matter how hard you try, you cannot chip those words out from the Statue of Liberty. And no matter how hard you try, you cannot sing the national anthem without the words. That's what America is. Bigots, love it or leave it. And finally, I am most tired of the silence from the White House. And so join me in this message. Join me in this message. Jimmy Carter, listen to us. You want to lead? You want to be the world's leader in human rights? Well, damn it, lead!
Harvey Milk's election to office and populist style brought new hope to the gay rights movement. But Milk knew that being the first openly gay elected public official would put him into harm's way. He recorded a message to be played in case he would die by assassination.
This is to be played only in the event of my death by assassination. I fully realize that a person who stands for what I stand for, an activist, gay activist, becomes the target or the potential target for somebody who is insecure, terrified, afraid, or very disturbed themselves. And knowing that I could be assassinated at any moment or any time, I feel it's important that some people know my thoughts. I stood for more than just a candidate. I have never considered myself a candidate. I have always considered myself part of a movement, part of a candidacy. I wish I had time to explain everything I did. Almost everything was done in the eyes of the gay movement.
I hope the people who are angry and mad and frustrated take their anger and madness and frustration out in a positive way rather than a negative way. And I would like to see every doctor come out who is gay and every gay dentist and every gay teacher and every gay judge and every gay lawyer and every gay architect, you come out and rip off the shreds of the closet door and come out forward strongly. It's needed, it will be needed more so then. And if a bullet should enter my brain, let that bullet destroy every closet door.
On November 27, 1978, Harvey Milk is assassinated by former San Francisco supervisor Dan White, who murders both Milk and San Francisco Mayor George Moscone.
As president of the Board of Supervisors, it's my duty to make this announcement. Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed.
In the trial that follows, White's lawyers use the Twinkie defense, arguing that Dan White was the victim of diminished capacity caused by the effect junk food and soda had on his already depressed state. The jury agrees, and Dan White is convicted on the far lesser charge of voluntary manslaughter. Pacifica Radio's Fruit Punch Collective was there to record the outrage that followed the announcement of this sentence.
The suspect is Supervisor Dan
White has been found guilty of one count each of voluntary manslaughter in the shooting deaths of Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk last November 27th.
Police have arrived at City Hall. They've got riot squad gear on. The police are pushing people off the steps.
On the evening of May 21st, 1979, you undoubtedly heard or saw news reports with the banner headline, 5,000 Homosexuals Riot in San Francisco. This program attempts to chronicle the events leading up to that evening, to report on what actually happened in the streets of San Francisco, and to reflect upon what one San Francisco newspaper called a night of fury.
As president of the Board of Supervisors, it's my duty to make this announcement.
Our story begins on Monday, November 27th, 1978.
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed. The suspect is Supervisor Dan White.
Dan White has turned himself into police and is now under 24-hour suicide surveillance. The motive for the killings was apparently a personal vendetta. This morning, Moscone was to hold a press conference to announce the appointment of a supervisor to fill White's position. White had resigned from the board earlier this month, claiming that the salary was inadequate for him to support his family. Later, he changed his mind and asked to have the position back. Though Moscone had the option to reappoint White, a conservative voice on the board, the mayor had expressed interest in several other candidates. Milk was a political opponent of White's, an outspoken liberal, and the first gay candidate on the board. Harvey Milk was not in favor of reappointing White to his position. For Pacifica in Berkeley, this is Lily Franklin.
San Francisco supervisor and gay rights activist Harvey Milk was elected to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors in 1977. He became the city's first gay supervisor in a city with a substantial vocal gay population. At the time, he said his election would bring hope to minorities and the disenfranchised. Milk said people would say that if a gay could do it, they could do it. Milk became well known during the recent campaign when he often debated Senator John Briggs, author of the Anti-Gay Teacher Initiative. Milk is credited with helping to turn the tide of public opinion against the initiative in the last weeks of the campaign.
To the people who voted yes, listen carefully. Meet us. Talk to us. Find out about us. Sit down with us when there's no pressure of an election. Sit down when there's no hysteria. Invite us to your meetings, to your clubs, to your homes. Find out that indeed we are not what you thought.
But Milk always insisted he was not a one-issue politician.
If I'm fighting for gay rights, then either I'm a hypocrite or I have to fight for the rights of everybody. And once I fight for the rights of everybody, then I have to fight for the spending priorities of everybody or I'm a hypocrite. And I don't think I'm a hypocrite. And that's why I've been involved in the issues of the district for so long, so hard.
For California Public Radio, this is Rita Schmidt in Sacramento.
As with other defeats suffered by the gay community, there was a response.
From Fruit Punch, the gay men's radio program on our Pacifica sister station, KPFA in Berkeley.
An estimated 30 to 40,000 people marched from Castro and Market to the Civic Center, where a rally was held. We were at that march, and we spoke to some of the people there.
I saw Harvey every other day, walking on the street, doing laundry. We had talked together, exchanged ideas. Almost everybody on this street certainly has seen him and had exchanged words and smiles and hellos with him.
I'm very confused because it's really hard to react to what's going on because it's very solemn, yet underneath I'm very angry because I feel this man had to take one faggot before he he got wiped off too, and there was no reason to do it all. And I think that the people are shocked, but I'm afraid walking down this street, and we're afraid too. It's just like walking down in who knows what oven you're going to be walking into. And that's the feeling I have.
I think Harvey Milk did a lot. I used to be really afraid. Since people like Harvey Milk and other people like that, it made me realize that I was okay.
Tonight in San Francisco, Harvey Milk has died, so we come together for...
Holly Meara, Joan Baez, and Meg Christian sang for the thousands who came to San Francisco Civic Center last night to mourn yesterday's assassinations of city supervisor Harvey Milk and Mayor George Moscone. Most of them were the constituents of the gay community which Milk represented. Diane Feinstein, acting mayor of San Francisco in the wake of George Moscone's assassination, praised Milk's sense of humor and sense of destiny. Feinstein asked for support from the gay community and unity without revenge or recrimination.
I come here tonight to ask you to take up that legacy and to give you the assurance that as long as I have anything to say in city government, this city will remain a city that strives for human understanding and rights.
And we've been here in the...
Only 2 days ago, City Hall was the scene of a tragic double assassination. Today it was transformed, filled with potted trees and flowers sweeping up a grand staircase beneath the rotunda. Under their blankets of flowers lay the caskets of Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk, each one with its honor guard of a fireman, policeman, and sheriff's deputy. While City Hall employees watched from the balconies above, members of the public came for a last glimpse of their slain mayor and supervisor. Thousands of people filed past the two caskets, many reaching out to touch and perhaps believe what still leaves many San Franciscans incredulous. There were many eulogies for Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk today, and each one called for hope in the future.
Monday, May 21st, 1979.
Dan White has been found guilty of one count each of voluntary manslaughter in the shooting deaths of Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk last November 27th. The jury, which had deliberated for 36 hours following the end of the trial last Wednesday, chose the least serious crime of the options given to them by Superior Court Judge Walter F. Calcagno. Voluntary manslaughter carries a penalty of from 2 to 4 years. For National Public Radio, this is Gene Parrish in San Francisco.
My reaction to the decision was one of disbelief.
San Francisco Mayor Diane Feinstein.
Whether I think it's fair or not isn't the issue. Because I wasn't there, I didn't hear what a jury of Dan White's peers felt. The fact is that he was tried by a jury of his peers, and that was their finding. I can comment on the law that would enable this kind of finding to exist. And I would have to say that there are flawed laws, and that the legislature should take another look at the doctrine of diminished capacity, because all of us, I think, would feel that anybody that commits a murder is not of sound mind, or you're not going to commit the murder.
During the trial, evidence was introduced by prosecutor Thomas Norman, indicating that on the day of the killings, the 32-year-old White, concealing a gun, had entered City Hall through a window to avoid doorway metal detectors. Then he calmly discussed Carolyn Kennedy's forthcoming birthday as he waited to see the mayor. Moments later, White shot Moscone, a 49-year-old father of four times in the body and head. According to prosecution testimony, White reloaded his gun and then sought out and shot openly gay supervisor Harvey Milk five times.
It was voluntary manslaughter from my point of view.
White defense attorney Douglas Schmidt.
It was an awful thing. I don't ever want to make light of it. There's nothing I can say that's, you know, going to help the families of the victims and all that and change anything that's happened, but I felt that the verdict was just.
Under the concept of diminished capacity, the defense told the 7-woman, 5-man jury that White acted out of frustration and rage. Defense testimony, including that of 4 psychiatrists, portrayed White as being so upset by personal problems that he did not have the capacity for malice, premeditation, and deliberation. the elements required for a first-degree murder conviction sought by the prosecution. Defense Attorney Douglas Schmidt used the peremptory challenge to keep all known gay people off the jury. Juror Grace Jackson said an important element of the verdict was the jury's determination to avoid more bitterness. In her words, "We didn't want to give the city a worse name. We wanted things to just quiet down, to be over with."
I think the jury was taken by the whole emotional aspect of this trial.
San Francisco District Attorney Joseph Freitas.
His wife, his background, the politics of that led to the murders, and that was something that the facts just didn't overcome, and that happens in cases, and unfortunately, in my opinion, this is somewhat of a tragedy because I don't think justice has been carried out in this case.
Jury foreman George Mincer told the San Francisco Examiner that the panel never seriously considered convicting White of first-degree murder because the jury could find no evidence indicating premeditation. Mincer said the jury reached a verdict on the Moscone shooting on May 18th, but that the decision on the death of Milk did not come until 3 days later. Each count of the voluntary manslaughter conviction carries a potential sentence of between 4 and 8 years. But White, who was once a San Francisco police officer, could be released on probation in 3 years. Under a complicated legal procedure, the longest prison term he could serve would be 7 years and 10 months. For Pacifica Radio, this is Mike Hodell.
They asked to rehear the definition of malice, which is required for any murder charge.
Pacifica correspondent Emily Clark covered the trial from the beginning.
Whether it's second or first degree malice is a necessary element. They asked to rehear psychiatric testimony in which, you know, different psychiatrists, they asked to hear one psychiatrist who was saying that Dan White acted like he was in a dream. He didn't know what he was doing. And so that sort of gave a hint that they were going to go for voluntary on one of the charges at least, but I don't think anyone there thought they were going to go for voluntary on both of them. I'm just very emotional about it, and I feel that it's almost like, of course, we have to think about the living and the people that are still alive, and yet it seems like this verdict shows that no one was thinking too much about the people who died.
I'll tell you what the gay movement's about.
Harvey Milk.
After I got elected, I got the phone call I knew I'd eventually get. Got caught a few of them. One was from a 17-year-old child in a small town in Minnesota, and the boy is handicapped. And the boy's parents found out that he's gay, and they want to put him in an insane asylum. And that boy needs help. And the gay moon is about the letter I got from Southwest Africa when he read about a gay person getting elected here. And that person has hope.
I think Harvey Milk did a lot.
And that 17-year-old kid in Minnesota has hope.
I used to be really afraid. Since people like Harvey Milk and other people like that, it made me realize that I was okay.
Not since the late 1960s has the United States seen such a violent expression of its people's anger and frustration as was seen Monday night in San Francisco. But on Monday night in San Francisco, the focus was different than that of the 60s. On Monday night, it was gay people, openly gay people, lashing out their frustrations at a society who, by its very structure, stands as an oppressor to gay people. Monday night, Fruit Punch was with the over 10,000 people protesting the Dan White decision as a direct attack on the dignity of gay people.
How are you feeling about what's happening now?
Increasingly angry, increasingly scared, very deeply hurt.
Lesbian feminist activist Sally Gerhardt.
Very much ashamed of a system that I put not much faith in, but at least a little bit of faith in sometimes, that, you know, a jury of 12 good people and true could come in with something so obvious as this with a proper verdict, and I'm enraged that it hasn't happened. And what I think is happening all over this country is that we are getting more and more military-minded. There is a huge right-wing backlash. I think people are beginning to want to put people more into boxes. They can't stand any differences. And the reason that Dan White shot Harvey Milk and George Moscone as well was because they were both supporters of gay people, Harvey being gay and Moscone being a supporter of gay people. And our connection now, I think, is with a broad-based questioning of a system that would have us all put in boxes, would like to have us all be just one way, color-coded into the proper sex role, and particularly have our men be in that masculine mindset, that masculine code that's going to make killers of them all. And it's the women who have been suffering the most from this all these years. Now it's becoming gay people who are suffering from that. I say that the whole nation is suffering from that. It's very scary, that verdict. Very scary.
What do you think of what's going on right now, sir?
I think they should burn down the whole place. City Hall doesn't represent us. The city government isn't representing us.
Something has run amok. It's real sad when somebody who murders, that legalized assassination, I don't like to see.
Well, I'm just here because I feel like I had to register my feelings some way. Although I'm not gay or anything, I just said he should have gotten so many more than 5 years.
I think today is a really terrible day for the gay people of San Francisco.
Former aide to Supervisor Milk, Cleve Jones.
And I'd like to see us move down to 18th Street and start it from there. Get the people out of the bars and into the streets. So maybe we can start moving down. So hit it. Out of the bars, into the streets.
I'm from KPFA.
You know what I would like
radio.
You know I'd like to say, I think those jurors ought to be tried. I think if it was me, if I was have been, I have a lot of frustrations too. I can't find a job. If I went around there and shot up a couple of people just to do something like, because I was angry at them, you think they'd let me out of there? I'd be in there till doomsday if I didn't meet the chair first. And you tell them, whoever they are, I hope they have nice, long, sleepless nights forever.
Walking up Polk, arriving at Grove, right before we enter the Civic Center Plaza.
He got away with murder! He got away with murder! He got away with murder! He got away with murder!
Following the demonstrations that erupted in San Francisco, police officers made their way into the prominently gay Castro district and incited what is now known as the White Night Riots, May 21, 1979. Pacifica Station KPFA producers were there to record reactions from people on the scene, as well as the manager of the Elephant Walk Bar that was the focal point of the police action.
Ron Eam, a resident of the Castro, went on to explain what happened in the Castro last night at about 1 or 2 in the morning after the demonstration had subsided downtown.
I was standing at the corner of 18th and Castro talking to people about the events of the day, and the police kept circling around and around and around and around until they finally provoked an incident. Once they had provoked the incident, they just called in. They came from everywhere. It was an army of them. And they started first marching up and down the street in, you know, kind of a military fashion. And then they just hit the sidewalks, and they were indiscriminately clubbing people. Then they took to the bars. The people in the bars, a lot of them, were the people who hadn't taken part in any of the demonstrations because they didn't feel a part of that movement up until now. And the police entered the bars I mean, they were hollering, "Faggots, we're going to get you, you suckers, you better run," and started just clubbing people and destroying the, you know, breaking out windows, clubbing people. After that, they kept marching up and down the street, occasionally taking to the sidewalks, you know, with their billy clubs, and just clubbing anybody who happened to be around. We were standing in our doorway here at just past 19th and Castro, and as this line of police officers went by, they charged up all the way up our stairs and in right to our front door, forcing us into the house with a weapon.
They had guns?
Yes, they had guns. Not all of them. You know, the majority of them had sticks, but there were officers with drawn rifles.
We called Kevin Sullivan. He's the manager of the Elephant Walk, which was the bar that was broken into by police last night. We asked him to talk about what he expected in the future, whether he expected a backlash against the gay community in response to the violence that went on last night.
I definitely expect a backlash, but I also expect the gay community to become more militant over what happened here last night. I'm just so shocked and so outraged that organized violence can occur, like last night from the police department, that whatever backlash comes about, we no longer really give a damn what straight San Francisco or straight America thinks anymore. You know, we've kowtowed too many times, and you know, this is sort of reliving Stonewall all over again, and it's not a very pretty thing. I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of turning my back and running.
Tuesday night, the tone was remarkably different on Castro Street. The long-planned celebration to commemorate Harvey Milk's birthday came off as planned, without violence.
Introducing Harry Britt.
Tonight, 15,000 people have gathered to demonstrate with their love that the spirit of Harvey Milk will always be alive in our city. And I sure as hell don't have to tell you that Harvey Milk's people do not have a damn thing to apologize to anybody for ever. Yesterday was a tough one. But as I've talked to so many of you today and received so many wonderful calls from you and from gay people and from non-gay people all over the United States, it seems to me that somehow we turned a corner yesterday, and that if Harvey Milk is listening somewhere, he knows that the gay movement has moved forward a great step because of what happened yesterday. Let no one believe that the step that we have taken is a step from nonviolence to violence. We have suffered too much at the hands of violent people ever to go down that road. But let us say that never again will our people ever stand by and let Dan White's people rule the day.
And that does it for this week's edition of From the Vault. The series is produced by Brian DeShazer and Mark Torres, and executive produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives and Brian DeShazer. We are now streaming and podcasting online at fromthevaultradio.org. Thanks to all the Pacifica listeners who joined our campus campaign and sponsored over 700 schools with the From the Vault series. For more information, call the Pacifica Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or visit us online at pacificaradioarchives.org. From the Vault is presented as part of the Pacifica Radio Archives Preservation and Access Project, which is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts and grants from the Grammy Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the University of California Berkeley's Moffitt Library, the Pacifica Foundation, and from contributions from Pacifica Station listeners. Our theme music is by Kevin Drum Holiday. Special thanks to Rita Gonzalez and the IMRU Collective for providing us with the tape that's been newly restored this week.